It was a big year for ogres and superheroes at the box office, with high-profile sequels to Shrek and Spider-Man. It was also a big year for controversies, including those surrounding Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ and Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. Because ticket prices rose, Hollywood's final box office tally of about $9.4 billion will be the highest on record. That's despite a drop in attendance for the second straight year. And as for art, Bob Mondello filled up his 10 best list and found he had a few pictures left over.
2004 may have been the year that movie makers discovered they could deal with politics and religion and not suffer at the box office, but they were more artful dealing with other things. Memory, for instance, was the subject of two of the year's best movies, a romantic comedy and a film noir. In the comedy, a doctor tells Jim Carrey that he can join his girlfriend Kate Winslet in having all recollections of their romance erased from his brain. Then, as the title has it, they'll bask in the eternal sunshine of the spotless mind.
By the time you wake up in the morning, all the memories we targeted would have withered and disappeared, as in a dream upon waking.
Is there any risk of brain damage?
Well, technically speaking, the procedure is brain damage, but it's on a par with a night of heavy drinking.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind had a non-linear structure that made it fascinating to watch, and Pedro Almodovar came up with an even trickier device in Bad Education. It's a quasi-autobiographical film mystery about the making of a quasi-autobiographical film mystery. It mixes flashbacks with fantasy sequences, has a heartthrob of a hunk who dresses in drag, and it uses hypnotic visuals to truly dizzying effect. Speaking of mysteries, another of the year's most intriguing films was a biographical epic about the guy who unlocked the mystery of sex back in the 1940s, researcher, author, and teacher Alfred Kinsey.
Stimulation. Who can tell me which part of the human body can enlarge 100 times? Miss.
I'm sure I don't know. And you've no right to ask me such a question in a mixed class.
I was referring to the pupil of your eye, young lady.
Kinsey was a distinctly American innovator, and so was Howard Hughes, the subject of the year's most high-flying film biography. The Aviator isn't just about airplanes, it's also about Hollywood and madness and wild flights of fancy. And Martin Scorsese makes sure that pretty much all of it soars.
Set course for 090.
With a little problem or two.
What is it, Howard?
Right wing just dipped! I'm losing starboard engine!
Flying of a more fanciful sort takes place with no special effects in a smartly scripted biography about the author of Peter Pan. Finding Neverland takes some liberties with reality, but then so did playwright J.M. Barrie, who's played in the film by Johnny Depp.
Young boys should never be sent to bed. They always wake up a day older. And then before you know it, they're grown.
Finding Neverland finds enchantment in Barrie's theatrical exploits, while another film converts a work of classical theater into striking cinema. Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice is sumptuous, vivid, electric, and centered on a ferocious Shylock, played by Al Pacino.
I pray you hear me speak!
I'll have my bond, I will not hear you speak. I'll have my bond, therefore speak no more. I'll not be made a soft and dull-eyed fool.
That's six of the year's 10 best, and my list is looking awfully male-oriented, so let's follow up with a pair of films that feature stellar performances by actresses. One previously unknown, Catalina Sandino Moreno, because she's making her movie debut. In Maria Full of Grace, she plays the radiant, if unfortunate, title character, a 17-year-old Colombian who becomes a drug mule and pretty much rips out your heart in the process. No less full of grace is Britain's Imelda Staunton as the title character in Vera Drake, a wrenching story of a 1950s London housewife who is viewed by some as an angel of mercy, by others as a monster.
You perform abortions, don't you?
That's not what I do, dear. That's what you call it, but they need help. Who else they're going to turn to? They got no one. I help them out.
Helping folks in trouble on a far more epic scale is the theme of Hotel Rwanda, a stirringly filmed true story of genocide, international apathy, and a hotel manager strategizing to save some 1,200 people who've taken refuge in his hotel.
There will be no rescue, no intervention force. We can only save ourselves. Many of you know influential people abroad. You must call these people. You must tell them what will happen to us.
Is it sounding as if I spent my whole movie year depressed out of my skull? Well, movies as smart and as well-crafted as these tend to lift you up, not depress. Still, let me round out the year's top 10 with a flat-out comedy. It was computer-animated, but had acting, scripting, and design work to rival those in the best live-action films, not to mention a family of suburban superheroes who were, in a word, incredible.
Dash got sent to the office again.
What? What for?
Nothing. He put a tack on the teacher's chair during class.
Nobody saw me. You could barely see it on the tape.
They caught you on tape and you still got away with it? Whoa. You must have been booking. How fast do you think you were going?
We are not encouraging this.
I'm not encouraging. I'm just asking how fast you...
Honey!
Ten is an arbitrary number, and I'm not out of time, so let's expand a little. Also memorable this year were some terrific foreign films, including Osama, about a little Afghan girl who protects herself by pretending to be a boy, Mulade, about African women determined to make life better for their daughters, and Goodbye Lenin, a wonderfully wry comedy about an East German son who tries to protect his socialist mother from the knowledge that the Berlin Wall has fallen. Motorcycle Diaries is worth seeing for its portrait of a young Che Guevara, and a riveting performance by Sean Penn elevates the social critiques in the assassination of Richard Nixon well above the ordinary.
These people, they just lie to make money, and then I'm the sleazy one of these so-called businessmen. They don't have any right to say half of the things that they say to us.
I wasn't bowled over by either of the movies that are leading the pack in Oscar talk, Alexander Payne's wine-slurping comedy Sideways, or Clint Eastwood's boxing tragedy, Million Dollar Baby, but they do contain some really sharp performances, and it was also an okay year for the kind of offbeat discoveries that make a film critic's job seem worthwhile in between the biggies, films like Zach Braff's Growing Up tale, Garden State, and the non-traditionally cast stoner comedy, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. That's almost a second 10. Enough to keep me in good spirits as I await the joys Hollywood will have in store in 2005, a sequel to what was already a year of the sequel, when we'll be treated to a third Mission Impossible, a fourth Harry Potter, a fifth Batman, a sixth Star Wars, and a 21st James Bond. I'm Bob Mondello.
The full list of Bob Mondello's favorite films of 2004 is at our website, npr.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.